One man with a truck and a knife caused havoc and death in Melbourne CBD last week. It's a scenario that the British law enforcement agencies know all too well. In June last year, 8 people, including 2 Australians, died when terrorists drove a van into pedestrians on London Bridge and then launched a knife attack. And last year, the UK suffered the highest number of terror-related deaths in Europe. Despite that, Britain's National Crime Agency is warning that organised crime poses an even bigger threat to national security, with criminal activities costing the British economy more than $65 billion. Lynn Owens is director of the UK's National Crime Agency. She's in Canberra this week talking with her Australian counterparts. Lynn Owens, welcome to Breakfast.
Thanks very much, Fran. It's great to be with you.
The UK lost 36 people to terrorism last year alone. That's the highest number of terrorist deaths in Europe. Yet you say organised crime is now a bigger threat to British national security. Is there any really point in comparing the two, and why are these figures so different?
So I think it's important to say, Fran, that we shouldn't see this as a competition. As you say, on the streets of the UK last year, we saw some truly awful incidents. And I just want to reflect on what happened in Melbourne and express my very sincere condolences to those who were involved. And of course, to commend what looked like a very impressive policing response. But if we only focus on counterterrorism and don't look at the real harms from serious and organised crime, child abuse, you're more likely to be victim of cybercrime than any other crime, trafficking of human beings, supplying drugs and all the harms they create onto our streets, the illegal supply of firearms. Actually, we are doing a real disservice to the public.
Can I just stick with the lone wolf? I know counter-terror is not part of your portfolio, I understand that, but here in Australia we're still reeling from the violence in Melbourne on Friday. And twice last year your country dealt with similar attacks on Westminster Bridge in March, as I mentioned, and London Bridge in June. We know lone wolves are often known to police before they carry out an attack. What lessons have British authorities learned about what it takes to prevent these attacks? There is sometimes a crossover between terrorists and organised crime, or certainly crime.
So as you rightly say, Fran, I'm not the lead for counterterrorism policing. Counterterrorism policing in the UK is led by the Metropolitan Police Service under Assistant Commissioner Neil Basu, supported by our security services and intelligence partners. There's been a number of reviews done of the events from last year, and we are concerned in the UK, particularly about people with mental health issues and how they can be radicalised, and that is receiving some serious attention with local partners.
Let's look at organised crime in Britain then. Your agency says there's 4,600 serious and organised crime groups in Britain. Just can you expand a bit on who these groups are? When you say groups, do you mean, you know, a local bunch of gangs, a local bunch of thugs, or each bikie gang? What kind of activities are they doing that make them a threat to national security?
So it ranges from local gangs right up to hostile state actors. And one of the things I think we're seeing is the nature of serious and organised crime changing. Technology, whilst it has many benefits, enables people to operate globally. So we work with the Australian Federal Police on child abuse particularly. We've had some outstanding results. So only last month, somebody arrested in Australia, the 2 victims were in the UK, and as a result of our joint work, they were rescued.
And so beyond trafficking, what kind of other sort of global connections are there? You're here in Australia this week. What are you talking about in that frame?
So we're also talking about the impact of illegal drugs on the communities of Australia. So we work together. We have resources deployed in Latin America from the UK, and the intelligence from that deployment is passed to our Australian partners, which prevents cocaine reaching your streets.
Breaking up organised crime has also been a focus of our government, in concert with terror activities, trying to interrupt terror activities, pedophilia, that kind of thing. Our Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton wants to introduce legislation that would allow law enforcement agencies to access encrypted communications, which he says currently impede 9 out of 10 matters dealt with by, for instance, our spy agency ASIO. I think I'm right in saying that Britain has these kinds of laws already. Can you tell us about what you have in place and why you believe they're necessary, if you do?
So I absolutely do believe they're necessary. Every single one of the investigations currently undertaken in the National Crime Agency is in some way impacted by encryption. Now, there are great benefits to encryption. It keeps us all safe. But we would say there are instances where we should be able to access apps and other data to help us better protect the public. So I strongly support the opportunity to look at legislation that gives that access.
So how have you done that without creating what's a so-called backdoor in the devices and the apps? How have you done that?
So I think there has to be a balance between an individual privacy and the security of individuals and the security of the state. I think there is a role for technology companies here. It is right, of course, that they want to protect their intellectual property, but it can't be right that they protect criminals and terrorists.
You're listening to RM Breakfast. Our guest is Lynn Owens. Lynn Owens is Director General of the UK's National Crime Agency. You mentioned hostile state actors. Your agency says Britain's become a destination for money laundering from a number of countries, including Nigeria, Pakistan and Russia, on a scale annually of the billions of pounds. But money laundering is not the only Russian crime. Earlier this year, two Russian nationals were named as suspects in the attempted murder of the former Russian spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter. They were poisoned with the nerve agent Novichok. This is a global issue, of course. How concerned are you and how preoccupied is you and your agency with Russia and Russian interference and activity on British soil?
So we want London to be a place where people have confidence to invest. And for them to have confidence to invest, they must be confident that our economy is secure. So therefore, whether it is Russian or other hostile state illicit finance making its way to our capital, it's something we're taking very seriously. We do have new legislation in the United Kingdom that allows us to place unexplained wealth orders where somebody must explain where their money came from. And we recently acquired our first order. So it's something we are taking very seriously.
One of the issues you're dealing with here is border security, and overnight UK and EU officials agreed to the draft text of a Brexit agreement drafted by Prime Minister Theresa May after months of negotiations in Brussels. You've warned previously that without such a deal in place, it would be harder for British police to pursue criminals across borders. Are you a supporter of the soft Brexit proposal of the Prime Minister?
Well, I'm pleased to say, Fran, I have to do many difficult things, but Brexit negotiations isn't one of them. So my requirement has simply been to explain to our government what we need in place. And we do need to be able to free flow intelligence and investigative information. So I'm hoping that that is the deal that has been secured.
Well, in fact, before the referendum, former security chiefs, including the former head of MI5, Eliza Manningham-Buller, and the former head of MI6, Sir John Sawyers, all said voting Remain was in the best interest of the country's security. Is Britain less secure because of Brexit? Will it be less secure because of Brexit?
I think it depends what the outcome of the negotiation is. I'm very concerned about the impact of a no-deal scenario. If today we see the announcement of a deal, let's see what the security arrangements are. But our ability to access the Schengen information system, which is a free flow of intelligence, our ability to use European arrest warrants, all very, very important tools.
So that's clear. That's the major reasons you need some kind of deal and access to Europe, or formal agreement with Europe, is it, for intelligence sharing?
Yes, so we have very good operational relationships like we do here. But at the moment, we rely on the Europol structures, and it would need a negotiation of different bilateral arrangements if we are no longer able to access those tools, which would in the short term have some impact.
So just finally, you're here talking border security too. What lessons do you hope to learn from Australia, or what kind of intelligence are you sharing on this front?
One of the things that you have done to very good effect here is not see your border simply as a geographic border. So the deployment of your officers from a number of agencies overseas and upstream is something that we are building on. So we rely on your officers in East Asia, some of the work that we do there on child sexual offending. We have one of your officers deployed in our National Cybercrime Unit in the UK. And I think there's opportunity to build on that and the capabilities that we have together.
Lynn Owens, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Lynn Owens is director of the UK's National Crime Agency in Australia for talks with her Australian counterparts, as we heard, and she'll also deliver the annual Magna Carta lecture at the British High Commission in Canberra.